Wednesday nights this summer, we are looking at what we might say successes and failures. And really, in many ways, we only need one class on that particular topic. When you humble yourselves before God, you submit yourself to His will, you'll be a success. When you exalt yourself or fight against God, you will be a failure. And in many ways, that's going to be a repeated message as you go through this summer. And you look at some great successes and you look at some horrible failures in their lives. A few different verses came to mind out of just a number that we could look at. But I thought about Solomon as he's writing in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And certainly Solomon's a bit of an odd character to us. He's a success and a failure, depending on the period of life that you're looking at. He's successful when he humbles himself before God. He's a failure when he trusted in himself and he went his own way. And yet he exhorts in Ecclesiastes 12 and verse 13 that the whole of man is to fear God and to keep his commandments. He recognized something there about our lives. You want to be a success? You want your life to matter? You want it to count for something? Fear God and keep His commandments. Because, in verse 14, God will bring every work into judgment, with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. You're going to stand in judgment for your life. And so what account will it be? How will it have been lived? There's a humbling passage in Matthew chapter 20. Let's get there in a, well, let's go ahead. Matthew 25. These pictures of the judgment scene that Jesus gives in Matthew 25, to me are humbling from the standpoint of so often when we talk about this idea of judgment, we oftentimes are looking at the idea of, well, those who are good, those who are bad, and yet we could certainly make an argument, I believe, out of all of these illustrations that Jesus is giving, that we're really talking about judgment upon the Christian. Judgment upon the one who knew God. Judgment upon the one who at least at one time in their life had humbled themselves before God, but some of them then fell away. And particularly in this section of Matthew 25 in verse 14 through 30, you have what we sometimes call the parable of the talents, and you have the one who would entrust his funds unto his servants. And two of those, of course, will go forth and double that which they were given, and the third one being the one who said, I went and hid it. I went and did nothing with it. The first two come back and present that which they had done, and they are met with a message, well done, thou good and faithful servant. And yet consider what is said here in Matthew chapter 25, when we come unto the one who hid that which he had received, beginning in about verse 24, and he begins to give his account. Think of what is said concerning him. In verse 28, here's kind of that final judgment given unto him, and he says, take therefore the talent from him, give it unto him which hath 10 talents. For unto every one that hath shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that hath not shall be taken away even that which he hath. Cast ye the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, where there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And it's chilling because you think about the estimation there. Here's the master thinking of his servant. A servant who, remember, at one point entrusted him enough at least to leave him 1 talent. He saw potential in this one. He had ability to manage that which he had given him. And yet when he showed himself, when he gave report, the master's estimation of him now is, you are unprofitable. And literally there the idea, you are useless. We think about our lives. What will we have gained? If we go forth and we gain the whole world, and yet we lose our soul, we will have been unprofitable. We will be worthless, and our lives will have mattered for nothing. When we look at somebody like Jezebel, there's someone who, in that sense, her life matters for nothing. We'll circle back in a minute to that, but think about the idea of living a life. Oh, maybe people still talk about you. But there's not a good thing that I can say about Jezebel. Not a good thing that I can say about her life. But that she wasted that which had been given unto her. And finally, among many others, but jump back into Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, Jesus is wrapping up. He's finishing this account of the Sermon on the Mount. And many ways he's giving his charge, if you will. Here's the so what. Go forth and live in the manner in which you've been instructed. And likewise, familiar with verse 24 through verse 27. And the account here, the idea of the wise and the foolish builder. But what really comes down? What made the one wise? What made the one foolish? What they did. One of preparation and work and labor made a structure, made a house that would stand, that would remain firm. The other one took the shortcuts, took the easy way, didn't worry about details, didn't worry about what he was doing. Both built structures, both faced the storms, but one would last and one would not. And ultimately, Jesus ties it back there into a spiritual application. In verse 24, he said, "Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them is likened unto the wise man that built his house upon the rock." But verse 26, "Everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand." One lasted, one was destroyed. One had something to show for his work and his labor after all was said and done, and the other one didn't. And that's really the lessons you'll continue to see. Success, when you will walk with God and follow Him. And here Jesus says, those who will hear my words and do them, but failure upon those who refuse to do that which is right. They also heard, they also knew what was good, but they refused to listen to it. And so the ideas of successes and failures. But hopefully, the goal and the idea was that as we go through this summer, hopefully we can draw out some specific points. What was it that really shines in an individual's life, either as a failure or a success? You know, as much as I mentioned that we really can't say anything good about Jezebel, I guess the only good thing you can say about her is she serves as an example of what not to do. It serves as a great example in that regards of what not to do. In many ways, she's one who needs no introduction. I think most people that have a even summary knowledge of the Bible will recognize the name Jezebel. Many attach that with the negative influence that she had upon her life. Really, I would go beyond a failure. She's an abject failure. There's no question about that in her life. Chad did me a favor that I wasn't expecting. And we've already read all the verses there that I largely was going to try to go through and read through tonight. So we've gotten a little bit of a picture in our mind of who she was. But here's a woman who stands as a failure, and we begin to think about it. She didn't drift away from God. That's not what made her a failure. She didn't just simply ignore God. It's not what made her the huge failure that she was. Instead, she utterly rejected God. Now, think about this. She had even opportunity to know God. We'll come back around again to some different points, but in 1 Kings chapter 19, you're going to have Sorry, my brain just drew a blank. I got a chapter ahead of myself. In 18, you have the conflict, if you will, between Elijah and the false prophets of Baal. And on that occasion, of course, you have the false prophets that will jump and holler and cut themselves and cry out all day unto Baal. Nothing happens. And yet here's Elijah that will utter a simple prayer unto God, and God answers with fire from heaven that consumes the altar, the sacrifice, the water that had been poured upon it, and left the people on that occasion with no doubt. You remember how chapter 18 starts. Elijah is asking them, how long will you halt between two opinions? You claim to be a people of God, and yet you are honoring Baal and the idols as your God. You can't have it both ways. You can't be on the fence. You can't be in between. So how long are you going to halt between two opinions? If the Lord is God, then follow Him. But if Baal, then follow Him. But make up your mind and decide what you're going to do. And after that great conflict, that showdown, if you will, there on Mount Carmel, the people are left without a doubt. The Lord, He is God. The Lord, He is God. Those people, at least to a degree, were willing to humble their hearts and admit what they had seen on that day. Now, Jezebel wasn't there, but she heard the report of what happened. And instead of humbling herself, she goes on attack against Elijah. In 1 Kings 19, verse 1 through 3, she says, I'm going to take your life, just as you took the life of the false prophets. Now, I use that as an example to remind us she was not in ignorance. She had the example, she had the knowledge that she needed to be able to recognize God and to humble herself before Him. But she rejected all of that knowledge and continued in her rebellion against God. And so she had every opportunity to know Him. There's no question concerning that. And rejected those opportunities while actively fighting against God and against His people. And if I could pull out a few things about Jezebel, that's going to be one of them. Is the very idea that this is not just simply a person who rejects the knowledge of God. This is not just simply a person who chooses not to follow God or wants nothing to do with Him, but this is someone who is actively fighting against Him, who's actively fighting against His people and seeking to destroy them. Notice as you go through these readings, even some of the things that we'll go back through and mention. In 1 Kings 16 and verse 31, to give a brief overview again, she was the daughter of a heathen king that worshipped Baal and led her husband to do the same. We're going to come back to that. She was a wicked influence upon Ahab. She would cut off, murder, the prophets of God. Again, it wasn't enough to establish the prophets of Baal. She fought against God. She fought against those who wanted to do what was good, wanted to do what was right. And so in 1 Kings 18 and verse 4 and verse 13, there was made reference there to the fact that she cut off or murdered or killed, slain the prophets of God. And yet, what did she do in verse 19 of 1 Kings 18? Well, she was feeding the false prophets. She was making sure they were well provided for. She built them up. We see already in 1 Kings 19, verse 1 and 2, we made mention of that, her threat to Elijah, that she rejected the knowledge of God that had been given unto her. In 1 Kings 21, there's an account that's given to us there of Naboth and his vineyard. And here Ahab acted basically like a baby. He wants a vineyard that looked good to him. Naboth refused to sell it to him, so he went into his room and pouted. Jezebel comes along and says, well, what in the world is the problem with you? I want that field, and he won't give it to me. She goes and she engineers the murder of Naboth and comes back and says, there's your field. She was one who was willing to take whatever it was that she wanted, regardless of the cost. Murder didn't mean anything to her. She would set all sense of morality aside to get what she wanted. She would stir up, it says in 1 Kings 21 and verse 25, she stirred up her husband Ahab unto wickedness. You jump over into 2 Kings 9 and the readings that we had there, verse 7, verse 10, verse 22. Think about how her works are described. They're described as whoredoms and witchcraft. That which was set against God led people away from Him. The result of which she was going to be cast down and eaten of dogs. Really a fitting end to the life of destruction and murder and wickedness that she caused in her life. As I thought about Jezebel, there was a thought that came to me, I guess hadn't as much before. You know, we think about Jezebel and that name automatically sends off these bells in our minds. And we know here was a wicked woman and we know that. Yet you really get going through some of these scriptures. There's not a lot told us about her life. And in part, I'm glad for that. In a part, I think about the Queen of Sheba. The Queen of Sheba would come and she would see Solomon and she made a statement in 1 Kings 10 and verse 7. She said, the half had not been told. And I thought, that's a fitting statement for Jezebel. The half has not been told. You know, we read through those accounts, and I want you to see a woman that is just absolutely wicked. We're given but a few glimpses into her life, and I have no doubt that there was much more that simply was not recorded of her. One last reference, and I believe it sets the tone of her life, the memory of her life. Revelation chapter 20, or Revelation 2 and verse 20. In addressing the church at Thyatira, as with all the others, in verse 19, Jesus is going to say, I know your works. I know your works in verse 19. I know your faith, your charity, your service, your faith. I know your patience. I know your works. The last more than the first. But notice in verse 20, notwithstanding, I have a few things against thee, because that thou sufferest that woman Jezebel, which calleth herself a prophetess, to teach and to seduce my servants to commit fornication and to eat things sacrificed unto idols. I gave her space to repent of her fornication, and she repented not. Behold, I will cast her into a bed and them that commit adultery with her into great tribulation, except they repent of their deeds. And I will kill her children with death, and all the churches shall know that I am he which searcheth the reins and the hearts. I will give unto every one of you according to your works. So what had happened to Jezebel? She had received according to her works that fitting end to her life. But I think there, in addressing this church at Thyatira, we're looking back probably not at a woman necessarily named Jezebel, but I think we're seeing one who exerted the same influence that Jezebel did in her life. She set herself forth, if you will, as a prophetess, because she was setting up altars unto Baal and the false prophets. She was building them up. She was pushing them on the people. She was leading others in her wickedness. In fact, it states that of her husband Ahab. Now, he was a wicked man in and of himself, but she stirred him up into even more wickedness. And we think that's a fitting description that you're seeing here in the book of Revelation. She sets herself, verse 20, as a prophetess to teach and to seduce my servants to commit fornication and to eat things sacrificed unto idols. She's turning them away from God to follow after others. And that's really the life that Jezebel had lived. She turned people away from God. And so we look at her life, And we certainly want to learn from it. We want to learn examples from it. And one of the greatest things in her life that we can really think about is the idea of influence. And what are we doing with it? Our influence can be for good, it can be for evil, and yet here Jezebel uses her influence to drive her husband and others that were around her deeper and deeper into sin. She was one here, as others are described, as seemingly as one who tried to invent more and more evil. She wasn't happy with the wickedness that she had committed. She would just keep on committing wickedness in her life. And so we think about this example of wickedness. I think we made reference to it, but 1 Kings 16, verse 32, I do want to read that as the backup to the statement I made a moment ago. Verse 32, he reared up. Verse 31 and 32, excuse me. Came to pass as if it had been a light thing for him, that is Ahab, to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he took him to wife Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Zidonians, went and served Baal and worshipped him, and he reared up an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he had built in Samaria. And so here again, here's Ahab, who is already walking in the sins of Jeroboam, already not walking faithfully with God, and yet allows himself to be stirred up, allows himself to be driven further away from God and further into idolatry, further into wickedness, because of the influence of his spouse. And so we ought to remember, there are a lot of examples, remember our influence upon others and ask ourselves, am I building them up, drawing them closer to God, or am I tearing them away from God? It's a sad statement when you consider Paul, and he's meeting with the elders at Ephesus in Acts chapter 20, and is going to warn them there that some of you are going to arise, Acts 20 and verse 30, and draw men away after yourselves. A wicked thing to draw men away from God because we want them to follow after us. When you think about the Pharisees that Jesus so often stood opposed to in Matthew 23 and verse 15, he says, you would compass land and sea to make disciples of yourselves, and you're making them twofold a child of hell than yourselves. You're not making disciples after God. You're drawing men away unto yourselves. There's a caution there for us. Are we drawing people away from God, closer to ourselves, closer to what we want them to be, or are we drawing them closer to God? But there's also the flip side of that coin, in the sense of who do we allow to have influence over us? Here we can certainly make example of the husband and the wife. Are you helping one another, build up one another, drawing closer to your eternal home? When you consider the great pattern God set forth there in Ephesians chapter 5 concerning the husband and the wife and how they would work together within the home to be what God would have them to be, you have to work together, and you ought to be searching for that one that's going to help build you up. And so be careful who you allow to have influence over you in your life. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. This is another great example, especially when considered, again, in the context of what Paul's discussing. In 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33, do not be deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Here, who are you allowing to have influence over you? To the church at Corinth, you listened to false teachers who destroyed your faith and told you there is no resurrection, and so now you have no hope. And you're allowing yourself to be beaten down. Be careful who you allow to have that kind of influence over you. Are they going to build you up or to draw you away from God? Paul's having to reteach and instruct and encourage them. Oh, yes, there is a resurrection. There is hope. Don't let those kind of people tear you down and tear you away from God. And so certainly the idea of example. We could certainly make a great example there. Titus chapter 2 shows us there's a great example that women can set for one another, even in their lives. Sometimes, unfortunately, people begin to think, well, I can't have much influence, or I don't have great opportunities. Oh, you do. Jezebel could have been an encouragement to her husband unto good. Instead, she was unto wickedness. And so Paul is exhorting here in Titus that you have the influence for a positive that you can. And so even there in Titus 2, verse 3, the aged women also, likewise, that they be in behavior as becometh holiness, not false accusers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they may teach young women to be sober, to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet and chaste and keepers at home, good, obedient to their own husbands, that the word of God be not blasphemed. You have a great opportunity for good, but what will you do with it? Again, will you build others up or will you tear them down? And Jezebel used it to tear down in her life. I'll come back to this point just briefly and to remind ourselves, when you think about Jezebel, the sins of Jezebel were calculated and intentional. She didn't live her life in ignorance. She knew what she was doing. She knew what she was fighting against. We see that even as, again, with Naboth and his vineyard in 1 Kings 21. She knew the underhanded nature, and she plotted murder. That was the pattern and example of her life. This wasn't simply weakness or ignorance. She was intentionally rebellious against God and against His righteousness. There ought to be a warning there to those who would drift from God that you can grow to the same callous nature of Jezebel. To simply not care about what's right, about what's wrong, about what's good in our lives and use that wickedness in your life but also as a pattern or example unto others. Think about Jezebel as an example of sowing and reaping. She didn't escape this life without its consequences. One might argue, well, maybe she should have suffered more. She'll stand before a just God who knows exactly what she did in her life. But she suffered the consequences of what she had done in her life. It ought to serve as a reminder to us. Yes, one day I know I'll stand before the judgment seat of God. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 10. I know the principle repeated time and again, the law of sowing and reaping, Galatians 6, verse 7 and 8. The man sows, so also shall he reap. If you're sowing unto wickedness, don't be surprised when that wickedness comes back upon us in our lives. Certainly will in eternity. How will we use the days that are given unto us? Jezebel was one who, I think back to examples such as Matthew 16 and verse 28. Here was a woman that rose to great power and rose to great influence in her life. In many ways, she is one that we could point to and we could say she could have had it all. But what was it worth? In the final estimation, what was her life worth? It was wasted. Because she consistently used it for evil and had nothing good to show for it. And so Jesus asked in Matthew 16 and verse 26, what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? What shall a man give in exchange for his soul? She stands as always now as an example of one who must not be followed. And so you have primarily one who stands out. Why? Not just simply that she didn't humble herself to God, but that she actively, rebelliously fought against God, against all of the knowledge of God, and reaped the consequences of what she had consistently sowed in her life. And so when I think of failures, Jezebel has to come to the top of that list. That she consistently fought against God and used that influence in a negative way. We'll say more about that in just a moment, but turn it over to Brian. exhortation that I would give you in consideration of how you think about Jezebel and apply some lessons to our life would be one final thought, and that's in regards to the name. One last thing we could say about Jezebel is she ruined the name that she wore. Now, it's attached with a false idol anyway, so there's not a lot of good that could be said about the name. But after she wore the name, there's no question. It is forever associated with wickedness. And we drove that home with Revelation 2 in verse 20. And God is still remembering Jezebel and her wicked works, and those who continued in her same pattern. And so the exhortation to us in Proverbs 22 and verse 1, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, and loving favor than silver and gold. What are we doing with our lives? What are we doing with the name that we live? Now, that's true of the name that we wear. It's true of the family name that we wear, but no greater name than the name Christian that we wear. What are we doing as we go forth into the world with that influence? Are we a shining light, an example unto others that see our good works and glorify our Father which is in heaven? Matthew 5 and verse 16. Are we, like so many others, those who bring dread? Those who unfortunately bring shame and reproach. Maybe bring the name hypocrite. The idea of one who's not living as they propose to live. What are we doing with the name that we wear? Again, when we think about Jezebel, she spoiled a name. She has a name now that would forever be synonymous with sin, with wickedness, with rebellion. I need to take the charge to think, as I go forth into this life, how will people remember me? Will it be for good? Will it encourage others to go forth and live faithful? Will it be an example of one who can go forth and I want to be imitators of them, and hopefully in the way that Paul speaks of in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1. Be followers of me even as I am also of Christ. Insofar and inasmuch as I'm following Him, follow in that same example. That ought to be what we want for our lives. It ought to be what we want for one another. And so the challenge as we think about Jezebel comes to us to look at our lives and think, what will my life be? How will it be remembered? What will be said of me? Will I be like Jezebel? Or will I be like so many other great names that people look back on and say, no, they weren't perfect, but they sought after God? People like David, man after God's own heart. People like Dorcas, who when she died, people remembered her good works. People like Peter and Paul and James and John, and we look back and consider the good that they did in their lives, and it becomes an encouragement unto others. If we're not walking in a way that strengthens, builds up, and encourages others, it's time to make a change in our lives. Maybe it's that we haven't started walking with Jesus, walking with God as He would have us to. And we know that He desires for us to be walking in the light as He is in the light, 1 John 1. And verse 5, we can go to the New Testament and see how He would begin, have us begin that new walk, as so many others did. They heard the gospel and believed it. They repented of their sins, confessed that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, and they were baptized, immersed in water for the remission of their sins. The Lord adding them to the church. We see that pattern repeating out so many times in the book of Acts. We know we can do the same thing and have the same joy and the same reward that they did even today. Maybe we look at our lives and we recognize there's something that needs to be altered or changed. No better time than right now to make that right. Perhaps you would request the prayers of this family. I know they would surround you, encourage you, build you up. Perhaps there's some other need that you have at this time. Whatever it is, would you let it be known as together we stand as we sing.